It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
And he's going to keep one downfield. Pass the defense is Cruz, who's got it at the 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 70 yards. Salsa time at Big D. Victor Cruz with another.
Play fake. Freeman back to throw. Under pressure. Heaves it downfield. Intercepted by Roll at the 5. Runs left to the 15. Cuts right back to the 20. Looking for a block up to the 30. And drag down there.
Manning takes the snap. Back to throw. Sidearms one left sideline. And it's caught for the touchdown by Reuben Randall.
Golzine takes the snap. Pass
intercepted as he threw it right. Picked off by a jumping Jason Pierre-Paul. And he runs it in for the touchdown. And finally, Carl, you can say you're down with JPP. A 28-yard TD.
Now, here's your host, Lance Meadow.
And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us this morning with you for the next 60 minutes as we break down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. Can't get to the phones. You can also chime in on the conversation via Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. You can follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Normally, each and every day, I like to get into a specific position. That's what we've been doing over the last few weeks, as this is now really the downtime period before training camp will start up on the 21st of July, as this is the start of the new month here for the New York Giants. But things are relatively quiet, as I mentioned, and then the players will start to report in the later stages of the month, and then they will get through and get going with training camp as they prepare for the first preseason game, which is August 3rd against the Buffalo Bills. That will be the Hall of Fame game. Giants are going to have five preseason games as a result of playing in that Hall of Fame game. So we focused a great deal on running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends over the last few shows. And I know Paul covered offensive linemen on Friday, where he went through some of the different configurations that the Giants could throw out there. I want to shift gears to defense, but if you want to call in on any of those topics that I threw out, I know we went into a great number of detail on the tight ends yesterday. So if you want to weigh in and start to speculate who you think is going to win that starting job, you want to get into how many wins you think the Giants are going to collect throughout the course of the season, we can get into that. But I really want to hone in on the secondary today, specifically the cornerback crew. And you can make the point that the Giants have a great deal of depth at that position, more so than any other spot on this roster. And when you look at last season's roster compared to this season's roster, that corner position is really night and day. And the group, if you recall, started to come together in the last few games last season. The defense was in the mid to high 20s very early on last year, and the entire unit wound up finishing with the 8th overall ranking at the end of the season. Now, the critics, the skeptics, point to the fact that, well, the Giants' defense wasn't tested. They went up against quarterbacks that were a bunch of backups, and it's not fair to give the Giants' defense that much credit. The bottom line is, we could sit here and get into all that minutia, but at the end of the day, the Giants' defense did improve. I don't think that's a stretch. I think the unit started to come together mid-season. You could turn to the arrival of John Beeson being a turning point, but the group did a much better job stopping the run and contained quarterbacks for the most part. Regardless of whether it was a Pro Bowl quarterback or a middle-of-the-pack quarterback, you play who you play. That's on the schedule. You don't have any control over that. But we can peruse the schedule for this season, and the Giants' defense is going to be tested, whether it be against the run, whether it be against the pass. And what the Giants did this offseason, they added depth, specifically in that secondary group. Now you have, at least when you look at the starting group, you're going to have Prince Amukamara on one side, you're going to have Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie on the other, and then Walter Thurmond is going to be that slot nickel corner. But behind those three, you can make the argument the Giants have three other guys that could start in this league. Why? Because they have experience. J'Ron Hosley, who is going to be entering year number three, he'll now still be in the mix. He's been primarily a corner nickel slot type of guy, and he's going to have some competition. There's no guarantee that J'Ron Hosley makes this roster, but it just goes to show you, you have a player that has been out there, he's done it, and he's had plenty of reps under his belt. So he'll be the backup, most likely, for Walter Thurmond. And remember, Hosley's had a great deal of experience on the outside as well. When he was at Virginia Tech, that's where he played. He was moved towards the inside when he arrived in the NFL. But if you look at his college numbers, Hosley, his junior year, no one threw his way because he was considered a lockdown corner in college. You also have Charles James, who had some experience last year. He's been on the practice squad. Tremaine McBride, who they brought back, who, remember, got a lot of starting reps last season because of a variety of injuries. So those are three players right there that are not just walking in to an NFL game for the first time. Then after those three, to me the most intriguing name, and I think he's going to have a huge impact on special teams, but he also could have an opportunity to make an impact in the secondary given the fact that he filled in with the Chicago Bears in a starting spot, and that's Zach Bowman. And if you were to ask me who is the one player in the secondary that stood out in minicamp, in OTAs, I would not tell you it's Prince. I would not tell you it's Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. And I would certainly not tell you it's Walter Thurman. And I'm not saying that those players did not do what they needed to during the course of the offseason program. But Zach Bowman made plays that stood out. Interceptions, hustle plays, things that allowed him to separate himself from the pack. And that's what you need to do when you're a player that is not guaranteed a roster spot. Zach Bowman is the veteran of the group behind the three starters that I mentioned. And the reason why Zach Bowman has a great deal of value is the fact that he will be able to contribute on special teams. And that is what Coach Quinn talked about when he addressed the media, the special teams coach, after minicamp, said Zach Bowman, you know, this is a speedy guy that we can bring in. He could serve as the gunner, and he could do a lot of things. So they find him to be an extremely intriguing player. Look out for Zach Bowman. That would be a guy that I would say, if you want to find somebody in the secondary that could wow you, that could make some game-changing plays in the preseason, that would be the guy that I would point to. Now, Dan Salamone, one of our top writers here at Giants.com, and I alluded to this article yesterday, he compiled a list of three players that have somewhat fallen under the radar, it's fair to say, so far this offseason. And the tight end that he brought up was Daniel Fells, and we talked about him in great detail yesterday when we were going over all the variety of tight ends and who may win the starting job. Went into a lot about Adrian Robinson. He also picked out somebody within the secondary in terms of who could perhaps elevate his game. And the one guy that Dan highlighted was Charles James, who I brought up. James McBride are the two that have more experience, at least with the Giants, than some of the other guys that are providing depth. But Zach Bowman, as I mentioned, he's been with the Chicago Bears when Charles Peanut Tillman got hurt last season. It was Zach Bowman who took his starting spot. And the Bears did not have a great deal of depth in the secondary behind Jennings and behind Tillman, but it was Bowman who provided some stability. So you've brought in another player that, yes, he's learning a new defensive scheme, but it's not as if he hasn't seen a variety of different defenses during the course of his tenure in the NFL. So that's how I would separate the unit as they enter training camp now compared to the unit even at this time last year and during the course of the regular season. You have three or four guys behind Prince, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, and Walter Thurman that are going to go out there and make plays, and you could at least feel confident about that. Last season, that was not necessarily the case. And they also have some size in the backup group. They have some versatility. Now, behind the next tier of players that I mentioned, you have Bennett Jackson, who is the Giants' sixth-round pick, who a number of you have called in on recent shows saying that, you know, perhaps he's a player that could find a role on this squad. The problem with Bennett Jackson, as I've said time and time again, is it's a numbers game. It's not necessarily a reflection of his work. It's just the fact that there are so many corners that have experience in front of him. He can only do so much on special teams to solidify a roster spot. So that would be the big problem with Bennett Jackson in terms of making a roster spot here. Outside of that, you have Travis Howard out of Ohio State, who they brought in. He also plays the corner spot. And you have Ross Weaver out of Michigan State. Two young guys that, you know, have been brought in to add some depth. They're going to get some reps. But once again, it's really a numbers game when it comes down to that. How many corners will the Giants wind up picking and keeping on this 53-man roster? You know, that's probably a good question to throw out there. And we'll take your calls at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. You can chime in via Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. You could also follow and interact with me directly, at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Let's get to some of your tweets here. AJ, at AJ Marshall 3, secondary is the strength of this team on paper. I think five or six guys will make the roster. Well, if you look at the numbers game, as I mentioned, Prince, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, Walter Thurman, you pretty much could put those guys in pen. You don't have to worry about penciling them in. They're in pen. So that's three. So if you want to say that the Giants are going to keep five or six, the next group is Tremaine McBride, Charles James, Jayron Hosley, and Zach Bowman. Those are the four players that are probably competing for three spots. I think they're going to keep six corners. Because this is what the assumption that I'm going with. I'm going with the assumption that there's only going to be two quarterbacks on the roster this season. And I think Ryan Nassib is going to solidify that second spot. I don't see the Giants keeping three quarterbacks for the second consecutive season. Remember, 2013, they keep three quarterbacks. You have to go all the way back to 2007 to find the last time they kept three. And I think with more experience under Ryan Nassib's belt, they're probably going to do everything they can to just have two quarterbacks on the roster. So you keep two on the roster, that means that you keep an extra corner, you keep an extra defensive tackle, you keep an extra linebacker. It opens up a lot of different options for you. Or if you use Peyton Hillis as a fullback slash running back, then you don't necessarily have to keep as many running backs and so forth. So those type of situations that are going to play out, to me, would open the doors for the Giants to not have to sacrifice a defensive player. And that is going to be key for the Giants because there's a great deal of depth on defense. Why part ways with a player that could very well be a game changer on special teams and, in a pinch, slide in as a backup corner? So that's going to be important. So I'm in agreement with AJ. I think six is probably a number that the Giants are going to turn to when it comes down to solidifying the roster spot. And Des, the DJ, throwing out, can't wait for the Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie jersey to come in. He's very excited about the secondary. And Rodgers-Cromartie is one guy why you should feel excited about the secondary. And the other thing that I think has been falling under the radar in terms of another storyline, keep in mind, Rodgers-Cromartie played with Antrell Roll in Arizona. So those two guys have a great deal of chemistry that they're going to look to get back to here with the New York Giants. That is something that bodes very well for the secondary. And you have Rodgers-Cromartie that has been with a variety of different teams during the course of his career. After Arizona, Philly, coming over from Denver. Walter Thurman comes over from Seattle. You know, it's not as if they brought in a bunch of young players. They brought in players that have been in the NFL and, to take it a step further, have also been suiting up for teams that have had a great deal of success over the course of the NFL landscape over the course of the last few years. So that is something that I think is going to be pretty exciting for the Giants as they head into the season. And anytime you could get a number of players in that are going to compete with one another, all it's going to do is raise the game of everybody else. And the Giants coaching staff has seen that already out of OTAs and minicamp, where these players are testing one another. It was funny, when Walter Thurman spoke to the media for the first time after he signed with the Giants, and I'm listening to what he's saying, the first thing that came to mind was, you could tell Walter Thurman came over from the Seahawks. He's got just that persona. And I'm not saying that he's going to be somebody that is going to be a distraction for this team, but the way that he just conducts his business, the way that he addresses reporters, the confidence he speaks with, you could tell this is a player that comes from that Legion of Boom mantra, and I'm referring to the nickname for the Seahawks secondary. And if you were to define that secondary, physicality, toughness, and four guys that you could tell them the odds are against them and they're still not going to back down. He's going to bring that to the table for the New York Giants. Now, the defense, to me, was not necessarily a problem in terms of personality last season. And that group, remember, was the unit that was keeping the Giants afloat. This year, though, I think they've added a few more wrinkles where you could say they could take off because Walter Thurman, his personality, could rub off on the rest of the unit. You know, Prince, if you look at Prince's personality, Prince is not a very vocal guy, at least to the media when he's out there on game days. Takes care of his business, but fairly quiet. Thurmond is going to help balance that out. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, balancing that out. Antrell Roll, he's got a personality. He's the vocal leader of the defense. So you've got a nice mix between the corners, between the safeties, and sometimes that could add an extra layer to this defensive group. So that is something to look forward to when you start to break down the secondary. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. At Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Let's open up the phone lines, get some chatter going here on Giants.com. And we've got Frank in Tampa. Frank, welcome to the program. What you got?
Thanks. How you doing today, my friend?
Doing well, Frank. What's on your mind?
Good, good. It's a very specific question that came up in the end of yesterday's show, and it's something I've been wanting to ask for a long time because I can't seem to get an answer to. So if you'll indulge me, it might take me a minute or so to phrase it. And it has to do with our friend Adrian Robinson. And from the outset, a couple years ago, when we infamously heard, you know, Mr. Reese describe him as the you-know-what of tight ends, I've since then been trying to find out, A, what he meant by that, and B, why. And again, if you'll indulge me, I even heard Mike Pope once say that if the tight ends are standing around in a group, that he stands out. But if you look at, number one, his stature, he's 6'4", from what I gather, which is actually slightly below the average of tight ends by a half inch or so in the league. In his weight, he's not really unusual in size. So then I've tried to go back, and I can't seem to get any measurements on him. I mean, I don't know if he's got 12-inch hands or something, but also in terms of raw athleticism, from what I gather, you know, he doesn't run a Vernon Davis type of, you know, of 40. I haven't seen anything that says that he runs some really unusual shuttles or anything, you know, like that. And so, once again, then my question is, why did Reese refer to him as that? Why did Mike Pope say he stands out in a crowd? And what was all this athleticism that was referred to by Jerry Reese? Do you happen to know what his, you know, 40 times were, or his bench, or, you know, something that would make him jump out? I don't see him. From what I gather, everything seems to be in the average range from size to athleticism. So please enlighten me. It's been driving me crazy for 3 years.
Well, Frank, I completely understand where you're coming from, and you're right. I don't think when you look at Adrian Robinson, I don't think it's a stretch what you just threw out there. He doesn't necessarily jump off the page or jump off to you in person where you're like, wow, this guy's a player. That's not a stretch. You look at him. I mean, listen, from a physical standpoint, I'm not saying that the guy's out of shape, but I understand you look at him and you say, okay, what separates him from the rest of the pack? Actually, as you were throwing out your thoughts, I was bringing up his pro day results and his combine results. I don't have a full detailed synopsis of his combine results, but in terms of what his pro day brought, that was on March 2nd, 2012. He ran the 40-yard dash in 4.56 seconds. The 20-yard dash in 2.59 seconds. He had 15 bench reps. His vertical jump was 39.5. His broad jump was 11 feet 3 inches, it appears here. And his 20-yard shuttle was 4.43. Those are some of the numbers I have here at my disposal in terms of what he put up at the pro day. And sometimes the pro day is a better indication than necessarily the combine, because sometimes the situation is a little bit more comfortable for the player to go out there and perform. A lot of what Jerry Reese has thrown out in the past, you know, part of that I think is gut feeling and what the scouts have told him. Remember, you know, you and I, compared to the scouting department, you know, we're watching videos, we're seeing him in person here or there, but you have to understand, when they determined that they wanted to take Adrian Robinson, they had been watching Adrian Robinson over the course of his entire Cincinnati career. So, you know, I was not necessarily watching him over the course of his entire Cincinnati career to tell you, you know, this game in December of this year, he did these types of things, which are the intangibles that don't necessarily jump out, but take my word for it, he's athletic. So, you know, I don't want to try to throw out a bunch of BS to you, Frank, and tell you that, you know, he's going to be this and that a year from now. All I could tell you is from what I've seen, at least in the present, meaning during minicamp, during OTAs, I have seen a different player from the standpoint that mentally he seems to understand this could be the end-all, be-all for him. He's physically fit, and I'm not saying he wasn't physically fit in previous years, and the fact that he's got a new voice in his ear in Kevin M. Gilbride, and he's got a new offense that I think better suits him. Perhaps that could add up to something that could do very well for the Giants. That's the only thing that I'm going by. As far as what Jerry Reese said in the past, you look at his Cincinnati numbers, Frank. He wasn't a big-time receiver. I threw out the numbers on yesterday's show. He only had 29 receptions over the course of his 4 years. And you're right. You look at his height. You look at his weight. You look at his pro day results. There's no wow factor there. However, there are a number of other players, Frank, to be fair, that didn't have great combines, didn't have great pro day results, and turned out to be good NFL players. I'm not saying I have a laundry list in front of me, but I can guarantee you if I did more homework, I could find a lot of players. So you can only put so much stock in the combine, the vertical jump, and this and that. Right now, I think he seems refreshed, Adrian Robinson. And as you know, Frank, compared to the other tight ends on this roster, it's not as if he doesn't have a legitimate shot to take the bull by the horn here. So that's what I'm going by. I'm sort of turning the page from an analytical standpoint and saying, hey, the Adrian Robinson of old was the Adrian Robinson of old. He was injury plagued. He didn't take advantage of his opportunity. Let's give him one more shot. There's a critical training camp. Let's see what we got. If it doesn't pan out, then, hey, we can rehash and bring back the JPP of tight ends, and we can sit here and say the Giants clearly made a mistake in terms of selecting him and thinking that he would be a guy that would play out from a potential standpoint. But right now, I think he deserves at least one more season.
Yeah, it still, you know, still remains to me a bit of a mystery, especially when I heard Pope make that reference about them standing around in a group, because, you know, they had some pretty big boys there. And you know, you had, what's his name, who's taller, Bear, you know, is taller than him. And it'd be one thing if, you know, you see these guys in the locker room, if you said, you know, wow, you know, the first day I ever saw the guy, he's built like, you know, Marcus Kuhn is now or something. You know,
oh, Marcus Kuhn, he is built like a brick. Absolutely. I'm not saying Adrian Robinson looks like that, but you're right. If you saw Adrian Robinson look like that, that would be one of the things that would stand out.
Right, or 15 reps. My God, that's decent for a defensive back. You know, it's terrible for a guy who weighs 280 pounds. It still just remains a bit of a mystery. There's no 4.38 there like, you know, Vernon Davis or something. There's no, there's no body type that, you know, that, as you say, would jump out off the page. The numbers aren't there. And my other question is, if from what you were saying yesterday, you know, I'm starting to wonder, was it just that he wasn't targeted, you know, in college, or that he wasn't even really a very good blocker? Because what I'm wondering is, with his size and all, I mean, you know, he couldn't understand the playbook enough to be in on blocking downs for 2 years? It just seems pretty strange if that was his forte. What am I missing?
Well, that was his forte. If you look at his Cincinnati career and you look at how the Cincinnati offense operated, he was primarily a blocker. They didn't really use the tight end heavily in their offensive system. So why he didn't get in over the last few years, if they needed an additional blocker to add some layers to the offensive line, it's a fair question. But my rationale behind that would be, it wasn't so much not understanding the playbook, Frank. It was a matter that he just couldn't stay healthy. A lot of the times when he was inactive, it had nothing to do with him being a healthy scratch. It was actually because he wasn't healthy, he wasn't practicing, and he had injuries that were basically lingering. So I don't really think it had anything to do with the coaching staff not having faith that he couldn't go out there and know his assignments. It was the fact that they didn't want to put him out there because from a health perspective, he wouldn't be able to execute. That is the one thing that has stunted the development of Adrian Robinson. I don't think it has anything to do with him not fully digesting the playbook.
When you're out there watching practice and all, do you see something that separates him? Do you see a burst, you know, when he gets the ball or, you know, off the line? Or is there one thing? Because, you know, the things that you, the stats you threw out there, the one thing that did jump off the page to me is, if I did hear you right, 39 or 39 and a half inch vertical for a guy that size is excellent. That's the one that, you know, made me go, wow. But do you see anything that looks unusual? Does he have, you know, 12 inch hands or something? I mean,
well, I'm a small guy, Frank, so everybody is humongous to me. So I'm the wrong guy to ask. You know, I mean, you could have a guy that's got 2 inches on me, and I'd still tell you he's got humongous hands. So, you know, I mean, me providing insight on that front is not going to do wonders for you. There's not necessarily anything that I would see on a daily basis where I would say, wow, that really has separated him from the pack. I mean, as a unit, I don't think anyone has really stood out of this tight end group. And remember, when they don't have pads on, there's only so much you can tell. Now, granted, I've seen Adrian Robinson with pads on in previous years, so it's not as if I need to see him with pads on to tell you he's going to do this and that. What I've seen during minicamp at OTAs, I've seen a guy, when the ball has been thrown to him, he's made the catches. And right now, I know that's a simple answer, Frank, and it's a boring answer, but that's what the Giants need. All they need is,
well,
we can get into that. They need this overly athletic tight end who's going to wow you. They just need a guy that's going to run good routes, make plays. That's simply what they need. So you know what? Adrian Robinson is doing that for the time being. Let's hope it translates to the games and it translates during training camp.
So just quickly, at the end of the day, would you say that the way I still feel is that those were two puzzling statements, that the JPP and Pope saying he stands out, wow. You're still puzzled by those as I am?
Well, the Jerry Reese statement, and I don't want to speak for Jerry Reese, but I'm sure if he could look back, he probably wouldn't have wanted to put those type of expectations on Adrian Robinson. I think it's natural when you take a player in a certain round and the scouting reports are very positive, there's a lot of hype, and you want to send that message out to the media. But looking back, considering how he was plagued by injuries and hasn't gotten out on the field, yes, I'm sure that quote was not best suitable to describe Adrian Robinson. So puzzling, it's fair to throw that term out now that we're entering year number 3 and we haven't seen much potential out of Adrian Robinson. As far as the Mike Pope statement, and I don't necessarily remember him saying that, but I will take your word for it, Frank, where he does separate himself from the pack out of the group. Listen, Mike Pope, he's in the meeting room. He's seeing Adrian Robinson on a daily basis. So if you want to put more stock in one statement than the other, I would take Mike Pope's word, considering Mike Pope's been around a number of tight ends over the course of his career. He's developed a number of unknown commodities here for the Giants. So I don't know if that's as puzzling as perhaps Jerry Reese's comment.
What is puzzling to me is that Pope's statement was limited entirely to his stature. He said when they're standing in a group, it's like, wow. I'm thinking, man, you got Pasco there. You got these other, you got some big boys there. And he was referring solely to his stature. So that's what made me think, you know, what am I missing? I go back and look. Maybe it's a misprint. Maybe he's 6'7", and he's not 6'4". You know, maybe he's 290, and he's ripped. But then I find out he's not. Maybe, you know, he can bench press 42 times, and he does it 15. So that's why, you know, I still find myself, I'm puzzled by the reasons that they made the statements, not that they were right or wrong, if you understand what I mean.
Well, and what I would say is, at least more so for the Jerry Reese than the Mike Pope, I don't know if you, do you remember when Mike Pope said that? The date, the time, do you remember, was it year 2 with Adrian Robinson here? Was it last season, his rookie year?
It was in camp, I believe, and I believe it was the first year. And he's just talking about, you know, everybody standing around. He said, wow, this is a big human being. He made the, you know, very large human being. It was a statement like that, and that he stands out in the group of tight ends by his stature. That's when I went back and looked, and I'm thinking, man, Pasco's taller. Some of these guys are heavier. You know, maybe he was standing next to Beckham. That's all I could think of.
It's possible. Listen, the Giants have had a variety of tight ends that haven't necessarily panned out. So anything's possible. Who knows? Mike Pope, you know, could have been talking about, you're right, him standing next to just one guy as opposed to 3 or 4. I'd really have to look back at the context. But it's fair to say that expectations were pretty high across the board for Adrian Robinson, thinking that this was going to be a player that was going to come in day one and at least make some noise. And, you know, right now we're still waiting for even some chatter to pick up. So for you to look back, Frank, I don't think it's a stretch. I don't think it's unfair criticism to say, you know, all of these statements were thrown out and we have yet to see that. And I'm sure behind closed doors, those conversations are happening within the Giants organization where, you know, Adrian Robinson's got to step up. And Jerry Reese may not reveal that to the media, but I'm telling you, those conversations are happening where they're telling Adrian Robinson, Adrian, you know, we don't have a big-time tight end. We didn't go out and spend a lot of money on that position. This is it. This is your opportunity. And when Adrian spoke to the media, Frank, before the offseason program got going, he made it clear that he received that message. He knows if he does not deliver this offseason, his role with the Giants moving forward is going to be in question.
Yeah, see, I'm a little disappointed because I was hoping, not having those figures and looking at potential, which is all we have now, and based on those statements, I was hoping to hear you say that, you know, he's 6'6", he's 290, he's ripped like Kuhn, he did, you know, 38 benches, he ran a 4.4. You know, I don't see any of those things that would give me this thought that, wow, we really got a diamond in the rough here. Seems to me he's got fairly pedestrian numbers, and he's never caught a pass. That doesn't bode well. You see what I mean? I'm a little more disappointed than I was.
Well, I wouldn't be necessarily disappointed, and this is my frame of motion here when it comes to at least supporting Adrian Robinson for another season. I throw out a guy like Jake Ballard. Did you know much about Jake Ballard, Frank, before he started to make plays? Was there a lot of hype surrounding Jake Ballard? Did you say to yourself he had a great collegiate career, he had great hands, he stands out in the group?
No.
So, you know, I mean, I'm looking back at other Giants tight ends, and I understand Mike Pope is not here anymore, and a lot of people are like, well, that was all because of Mike Pope. There's members of the coaching staff that have developed tight ends. So if the Giants could get that type of production out of somebody who had never done that before, perhaps if Adrian Robinson can stay healthy, there's no reason to perhaps question them not being able to get that out of Robinson. So that's why I said this is the critical season. If it can be done, this is going to be the year.
Well, put me down on, what is today, July 1st?
July
1st. I have no reason for this. Based on what you've told me, I should be pessimistic. But something tells me there's going to be a spark lit under the young man. He's going to end up starting for us and have a solid five-year career. Put me down.
Sounds good. I will write it down, Frank. You're going on the wall just with the other predictions. And appreciate the phone call, Frank. Thanks so much for weighing in. And as it stands right now, I'm not necessarily in agreement with Frank on the 5 years. I mean, that is a bold statement. But I'm in agreement that I believe Adrian Robinson is going to win the starting job. I truly believe that. I think that the Giants are going to do everything they can to get Adrian Robinson that starting job in terms of the number of reps he gets in training camp and the number of opportunities he gets in the preseason. And as long as he has no setback with an injury, I truly believe Adrian Robinson will be the starting tight end. And I think that this is going to be the season where he is going to start to break out. I'm not putting numbers on it. And I don't want to get into that and tell you he's going to get 50 receptions and 6 touchdowns. For all of you fantasy addicts, listen, we can have that conversation at another time. But when it comes to production, reliability, one of the terms thrown out on Twitter the other day, I think it was Avery. All you need is somebody that is going to be a suitable tight end. Somebody that is just going to make plays and be reliable. That's all you need out of Adrian Robinson. And that's what I was having the conversation with Frank about. You know, you don't need a guy that's going to come in and get 10 touchdowns and be Jimmy Graham and have a tremendous amount of versatility and play like a wide receiver. It's not what the Giants need, because the Giants have enough weapons at other positions that they could turn to in a pinch. But you want a player that is reliable. You throw him out there, he knows the playbook, he runs crisp routes, he makes catches. That's it. And he doesn't put Eli Manning in a precarious situation. That's all you need. Jake Ballard did it. Kevin Boss did it. Martellus Bennett did it. And what do all three of those players have in common? Resumes that were not that impressive coming into the Giants. Had experience, but didn't necessarily have that wow factor. So Adrian Robinson is in a situation where the wow factor's not there. The resume with an overwhelming amount of receptions and touchdowns is certainly not there. Why? Because he doesn't even have a reception. the experience maybe he lacks compared to the other players I threw out, but it's fair to throw him in that same category. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Lance Medow with you here on a Tuesday morning. Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. So glad you could join us. Let's head back to the phone lines. We'll also get to your tweets at hashtag Giants Chat. You can follow and interact with me directly at Lance Medow. To the lines we go. Marco is in Connecticut. Marco, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. How are you?
Doing very well, Marco. How about yourself? What you got?
I'm doing great. I wanted to talk a little bit about the secondary,
sure.
But when I was on hold and listening to Frank's point about the tight end, he brings up some great, just really some great thoughts about Robinson. And I think, you know, and I could be wrong, you know, someone would really have to, you know, really press Jerry Reese on this, and I don't think he'll ever go back to it. I think what happened was when he made that when he made that comment about Robinson after the draft, it was on his raw football ability. And when you're comparing it to JPP, I think they were looking at it as when they drafted JPP, he was very raw, didn't have a lot of football experience, but the Giants knew his ceiling was skyrocket high. And when they draft Robinson, this is right after JPP just had a career best year. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was right after the Super Bowl. So, you know, and that gets magnified a little bit where the league was at the time. You have those two tight ends in New England that are blowing up, and Jimmy Graham was blowing up. So here the Giants go take this freak tight end and compounded what Reese said. It's got fans wondering, where is it? But I'm with you. I agree with you that I think, bring him back down to earth, he's going to be more of a serviceable tight end in that Ballard role. And you have to think, with the tight ends on the roster, McAdoo will design an offense that's going to help him be successful. And I'm not saying Gilbride's wasn't, but I think this is a make or break year for him. And since there isn't really a ton of competition on the roster, a guy like Robinson and Donnell are going to be put in the best situation by McAdoo to be successful. What do you think about that?
I agree. You look at the competition around those two in particular, and there's no Martellus Bennett here this year. There's no Brandon Myers. Those were two tight ends over the last 2 years who had some resumes, and you knew coming in they were going to be the number one tight ends, and then Robinson and company were competing for complementary and backup roles. This year, Daniel Fells is not penciled in as the number one starter. He's basically on the same tier as an Adrian Robinson and a Larry Donnell, even though the experience is somewhat lopsided. So if I'm Adrian Robinson, I'm saying to myself, unlike any other season, any other offseason with the Giants, I have a legitimate shot. And it's not chatter, it's not BS, and it's not media speculation. I have the best possible shot to win the number one starting job. You put yourself in the shoes of any player who would have that opportunity. You're going to tell me there's not enough motivation there? There's not a little bit more ammunition or gas in the tank? So I would agree. I think that you take those things into consideration. All of a sudden, the mindset is a lot different than where it was a couple of years ago. And I also think you were spot on, Marco, in terms of where Jerry Reese was coming from when he threw out the JPP of tight ends. You're right. JPP was a player that he barely played high school football. He had 1 year in college. So when he looks at the raw talent, the intangibles, the characteristics, saying, you know what, Cincinnati didn't necessarily use this guy as how we would like to use him. But you know what? You look at him, you see the types of things that he did, maybe not consistently, gave a flash here or there during his collegiate career. We put him in our Giants system. There's the possibility. There's the potential. And that's what they were saying about JPP. JPP was a question mark too, Marco, when he came to the Giants.
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't tell me that he was going to translate automatically into a consistent pass rusher, considering the only thing that really stood out at times was the backflips that he did when he was off the field. So let's not forget about that.
Oh, yeah. And when JPP first got here, I remember they were asking guys like OC and Tuck about his ability. And quickly, those players would translate the conversation to, sure, there's ability there, but he needs to demonstrate that he could do it in the classroom, and let's put it all together. And just one last thing about Robinson before the secondary. Another thing that I thought about, the front office is also sending him a sign that, hey, they believe in him. They didn't bring in anyone to compete with him. No one is like a big free agent like you mentioned, like even like a Myers. There was no free agent that they brought in at tight end. I don't want to hear anything else about Robinson being late for camp because of class in Cincinnati or injuries. This is his time now. The secondary now. So, yeah, Lance, I'm with you all the way about six cornerbacks. So I have Prince, DRC, Thurman, Bowman, and then I think McBride, if I know the Giants like him a lot. I think there was an injury, if I'm not mistaken, so I hope it's nothing that's going to really set him back in camp. And then I have Charles James versus J. Ron Hosley for that last spot. What do you think about that?
I think the way that you set it up is the way that I would look at it. McBride, you're right, has been sidelined a little during OTAs and minicamp, but they expect him to go during the course of training camp. So I don't think it's going to be a long-term lingering concern. Right now, it's just playing the conservative route. Same thing with a guy like Chris Snee and a few other players. But it's going to be a battle between Hosley and Charles James. And you probably could even throw out Bennett Jackson, who I think the numbers are against, and they may look to put him on the practice squad. But maybe Bennett Jackson wows them during the course of the preseason. I would say Zach Bowman has more value than the rest of them because of what he can provide on special teams. And if he maintains that and he goes out and provides a couple of game-changing plays during the preseason, that to me would solidify his spot. Hosley right now has Walter Thurmond in front of him, and Walter Thurmond is going to play that position that they normally brought in Hosley in previous seasons, that slot corner. So, in previous years, Hosley's probably feeling pretty good about himself, saying, well, we don't really have another slot corner. Now they brought in an established corner from a winning Super Bowl team, so it's going to be tough. And a lot of these guys that you threw out are relatively on the small side, meaning it's not as if one is different than the other. The Charles James, the Hosleys, the Tremaine McBride. So if they're similar from a physical standpoint, it's going to be the little things that's going to ultimately separate them. So that's why I think it will ultimately come down to a Charles James, J-Ron Hosley, Tremaine McBride battle. But Zach Bowman, if he maintains the level of play that he's thrown out there in minicamp and OTAs, I think he's going to find himself having a spot where he shouldn't be concerned. So that would give you four. And then out of those three that we talked about, you take two. And my money would probably be on McBride. And, the Giants, they don't love to part ways with rookies. And Hosley is still relatively young. I'm not saying he's a first-year player. But, it's not as if they drafted him 10 years ago. So they're going to give him every shot to keep on this roster and at least show that he could be a consistent weapon. So, that would at least put Charles James in a tough position. And the fact that James has had experience on the practice squad, maybe they can look to at least retain him in some capacity, assuming that his eligibility hasn't run out.
But Lance, I like what the secondary now does for our special teams. On a side note, but the Hosley too, you have to figure that he's behind these guys, especially Thurmond with the 4-game suspension.
Well, Walter Thurman's fine. He's not facing a suspension.
No. J-Rod Hosley is.
Oh, J-Rod Hosley. Correct. Yes. I hear what you're saying. And, yes, it's going to hurt him from a numbers game. Perhaps, but here's the thing. You could put him on the suspended list to start the season, and then you make the roster decision when he's eligible to return.
Sure.
So you don't you don't have to get rid of him just to make room for somebody else. You make your 53. He's not on the 53 because he's on the suspended list. Then when he's eligible to return, yes, then you have to make the decision. So then you either part ways with him or you cut somebody else. So I don't know if they're up against the gun just because he's suspended, saying, oh, well, he can't compete in the first four games. We got to get rid of him. They're not necessarily going to be put in that type of position.
Last, I agree with you, Lance. Last two for me, and then I'll take them off the air. Will Hill, so arguably you could say, most important player last year with John Beeson, probably going into this year, he would have been top three players on our team. and now he's not on the team. So how do you think – so how does the Will Hill loss affect us? And I need a little bit more besides just Stevie Brown filling in for him, because there's obviously – Will Hill has ability that I don't think Stevie Brown has. And then my second question is, who's picking up in our defense, who's going to pick up now with our new-look secondary that hybrid tight end that we might play this year? Even if you want to throw a Jordan Reed, let's see what kind of season he has. Is it Thurman? Is it a safety? Or is it one of the linebackers that's going to pick up the tight end? Thanks, Lance.
You got it, Marco. I appreciate the questions. Appreciate the feedback. Some good stuff out of Marco. Following up on Frank's phone call. A lot of debate still about Adrian Robinson. And he is a fascinating subject because there's so much mystery and intrigue connected to Adrian Robinson. But let's address the two questions that Marco threw out in terms of the secondary. And then I'll get to more of your phone calls at 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Also, reach out to me on Twitter. I'll get to some of your tweets at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Okay, question number one that Marco threw out was about Will Hill. And with Will Hill gone, who picks up the slack? Is there concern in that safety spot? Right now, if the season were to start today, you would say Stevie Brown and Antrell Roll are the two starting safeties. Behind those two, what are your options? Well, you have Quinton Demps, who is a player to watch, just like Zach Bowman. Bowman, Demps, and Holiday. Those are my three players to watch during training camp, because these are players that are going to contribute at their respective positions. Holiday, wide receiver. Demps, safety. Bowman, corner, in addition to special teams. Those players are extremely valuable in the NFL. Extremely valuable. If you have a player on the roster that could play multiple positions, then you don't have to worry about keeping an extra guy at that respective spot, and it could open up the doors to add depth at another position. But to not digress and get back to the subject here, Demps is the player that is going to make up for the loss of Will Hill. Is he Will Hill? Is he a duplication of Will Hill? No. But Demps brings the versatility to the table that Will Hill brought. Demps can come down to the line of scrimmage. He could play deep in the safeties. And he could also be used as a linebacker. So to answer Marco's question about who could make up to guard that hybrid tight end, I think Demps is one of the players that is going to come to mind. I would not put Walter Thurmond on a tight end. I don't think Walter Thurmond has the physicality. He's got the confidence level, but I think there's better options than throwing a cornerback onto a tight end, tight ends, who we were talking about with Frank earlier, that could be as tall as 6'6 and 6'7. I would not necessarily put Walter Thurmond, who's 5'11, on a tight end that's got a number of inches on him. I would rather put Quinton Demps. Now, what you're going to counter that argument with me is saying, well, Quinton Demps is only 5'11. You're right. Demps is not necessarily a big guy. But Demps, from a physical standpoint, I think can match up better, strength-wise, with tight ends. And he's had more experience at safety, going up against some bigger wide receivers, bigger tight ends than necessarily Walter Thurmond. So that's why Demps would bode well against the tight ends. In addition, I think they are still going to use linebackers. And Jaquan Williams is probably the one guy that comes to mind. Williams had, I don't want to kill Jaquan Williams, but compared to how he did in 2012, it's fair to say Jaquan Williams had somewhat of a down year. That's not a stretch. If you look at his production in 2012 to his production in 2013. I'm not saying Jaquan Williams fell off the face of the radar, but he just did not have that game-changing ability that he brought to the table in 2012. 2012, there were a number of games where Jaquan Williams made plays. And I'm not just talking about the playoffs. You could also point to the regular season. They need Jaquan Williams to return to that level. If he stays healthy, he returns to that level, you've got a nice compliment to the McLeans of the world and the Beasons of the world. And let's not forget, you still have a Paysinger. You have another play that you can rotate. But Williams has the physicality and the speed to match up with a tight end. So Jaquan Williams, Quinton Demps, to answer the question, those would be the two players that I think would bode well against tight ends. Antrell Roll is a player that you can still use in that corner slot spot. But they brought in Walter Thurmond to prevent themselves from having to play a game of musical chairs with Antrell Roll. They do not want to keep moving Antrell Roll around. Antrell Roll is at his best when he sticks to one position. And that is the primary goal this season. Roll Stevie Brown, move Demps around, move Thurmond around, move a linebacker around. But let's stop moving around Antrell Roll. So there are a number of options, I think, that they could put on a tight end, and that could be a hybrid type of player. See, Marco threw out an interesting term about the tight end, that hybrid player on offense. I would say the Giants have a lot of hybrid defenders. Another player that I'll throw out, but it's very premature to say that he's going to get a lot of reps, is Nat Burhe, the safety out of San Diego State, who they took in round 5. He was a hybrid defensive player, if you follow his collegiate career. He was a guy that was brought down to the line, played deep as a safety, played a linebacker spot. So he has the experience to adjust to that, but I think there's other guys ahead of him on the depth chart with respect to that. So that should pretty much answer the two questions that Marco threw out, which are good questions. Who's going to make up for Will Hill, and who is going to be slid in as that hybrid type of defender? And I think Quinton Demps is probably a player that they went out and pursued aggressively, not for just the return game. Whenever I have conversations with people about Quinton Demps, the first thing that comes to mind is, oh, he's going to be an explosive return guy. Trindon Holiday is going to be an explosive return guy. And they're not wrong for throwing that out. But let's not forget that Quinton Demps has been a serviceable safety during the course of his career, whether it be the Eagles, whether it be the Texans. And let's not forget that, yes, Holiday is a special teamer. And it's hard to make this argument for Holiday more so than Demps. There's not as much stock with Demps as opposed to Holiday when you look at what he's done at another position. But I'm going by what I've seen in OTAs and minicamp. They're using Holiday as a wide receiver. And there's nothing wrong with the experimentation. Am I going to tell you that Trindon Holiday is going to be the X factor? He's going to be the wide receiver that's going to lead the rest of the pack? No. But there's going to be a number of plays for Trindon Holiday in this offense. And Ben McAdoo is looking at this roster and he's saying, what new wrinkles can I bring to the table? That is a new wrinkle. And that is something that Giants, fans, players, coaching staff should be exciting. Because if you can bring anything new to the table, there's nothing wrong with that. All that's doing is it's trying to perhaps test the oppositions that you're going to go up against and invigorate an offense. And we know that this offense needs a new wrinkle or two. That's not a stretch. 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. We've got Carl in Charlotte. Carl, welcome to the program. What you got?
Hey, how you doing, Lance?
Doing well, Carl. How about yourself?
Not bad. I want to ask you something now. All right. I'm not mad at the special teams. Special teams are going to be better than we have been in the last 10 years. Would you agree with that?
Special teams, I think, is going to be a lot better than in previous years. And you're right. It's not comparing it to much, Carl, because I don't remember the last time they had multiple options to take the kickoff return job and the punt return job. So the depth alone puts them in a much better spot.
Okay. And then defensively, I know we lost Will Hill, but if he don't want to stop smoking pot, that's his problem. We got better because we got Cromartie, so I'm not really worried about that spot. On the line, yeah, we lost Tuck, but besides last year he had a bunch of sacks against Washington, and then, you know, the years before that, he was kind of not too good. So we got more. I think he's going to be better this year. I think defensively we're going to be way better than we were for the last 2 or 3 years. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think it's going to be a more consistent unit as long as everyone stays healthy. Remember, the start of last season, John Beeson's not here very early on. He doesn't come in to play until that Bears game, and they already put themselves in a very deep hole. And then you welcome back some healthier bodies later in the season. So if the unit that we're envisioning on paper, and you threw out a lot of the names, Carl, is able to show some durability, I think it's going to be a consistent group where it's it's not going to be a group that starts off ranked in the 20s and then finds its way all the way to number 8. It could be a group that legitimately could stay within the top 10 in the NFL. I think there's the potential there. I don't want to put the expectations through the roof, but based on paper, I think they have the ability to be a top 10 defensive unit, at worst top 15, and I think they can hold that throughout the rest of the season. So overall, you have more depth at other positions, and as long as everyone stays healthy, I think this group is going to be much better than last year's group. Yes.
Okay, so I agree. So we agree on that one. Now, offensively, you tell me the one position that you're the most worried about.
Most worried about in terms of by an individual play, or are we talking about the overall group?
An individual player.
Well, I probably have to point to tight ends because there's a big mystery and a big question mark next to that. Now, that doesn't mean that I think the Giants need a tight end to survive and have a productive offense. Don't misinterpret that. But if I'm looking at the individual depth chart, the individual playmaking ability, I would say tight end is the biggest question mark.
Okay, so we're going to disagree because I'm going to say Will Beatty, left tackle, and the fact that you don't have a good blocking tight end, even if Will Beatty was there. And I mean, he had a really bad year last year, and at the end of the year, he broke his leg. And you didn't get a blocking tight end, so that if you put the tight end on that side, he could help chip, he could help do something. But if Will Beatty is going to be as bad as he was last year, and this is coming off of a broken leg, if he's going to be as bad as he was last year, and even worse with a broken leg, and you don't have a tight end that can really block, it's going to be a disastrous offensive season.
Well,
don't you think so?
Carl, it's fair to be concerned about Will Beatty. I don't think you're stretching it there, but compared to the tight end spot and compared to some other positions, Will Beatty has a track record before 2013. Was he the best left tackle in the NFL? No, but he was a productive, consistent left tackle who never allowed Eli Manning to be that pressured as we saw in 2013. Also, let's not forget, how many different guards did he play next to over the course of 2013? How much movement was around him on the offensive line? So if there's stability around him and he's healthy, it's not a stretch to say Will Beatty can return to being a consistent left tackle. I don't think that's too much.
Okay, but coming off the edge, how much is a guard going to help you coming off the edge? How much is a tight end can help you coming off the edge? He can shift for you.
Correct.
A blitzing backer off the edge. A guard's not going to be able to help you. He was really bad last. He was horrible last year.
Well, there was a lot of guys that were beating him one-on-one, and I'm not going to sit here and argue with you. There's a lot of evidence to support that, Carl. I don't disagree with you. But before 2013, let's not forget, Will Beatty, that was not his first season with the New York Giants. If you look at his resume, and I know a lot of people disagree with me on this, I'm not telling you once again that he was the best left tackle, but you're going to tell me you didn't feel okay about the left tackle spot before 2013? Were you questioning Will Beatty in previous years?
Okay, but we don't have a viable backup. And here's my point. I think we should think about moving Hugh over to the left tackle spot. That was his position in college.
So where are you going to put Will Beatty, though?
I'm trying to forget about Will Beatty. I'm telling you the truth.
Well, you can't. I mean, listen, and this may be a weak argument from a financial standpoint alone. The Giants are not benching a guy that they have a great deal invested in. I mean, that's not going to happen. So we've got to deal with reality here. And if you look at all the left tackles, Carl, compared to Charles Brown, James Brewer, Will Beatty is still at the top of the list, regardless of him coming off an injury, because he has the consistency factor. Charles Brown, let's not forget, was benched in favor of Teron Armstead last season with the New Orleans Saints. He lost his starting job because he was beaten off the edge. So it's not as if the number of guys behind Will Beatty are coming in with Pro Bowl resumes Beattie's and saying, oh, well, Will Beattie's in trouble. Will Beattie's not in trouble from a job security standpoint. And here's the other thing why I'm not in favor of moving Justin Pugh to left tackle. Let's say Will Beattie's not 100%. Okay, let's go with that hypothetical. So you move Justin Pugh to left tackle. You work him in during the preseason training camp. And you start a new right tackle in. Okay? Then Will Beattie comes back. He's refreshed. He's ready to go, let's say, week three, week four. Now you got to play a game of musical chairs all over again. You move Pugh back to right. You slide in Beattie to left. And now guards are playing next to different left tackles, different right tackles. The center is learning new signals and signs. And you're back to 2013 all over again. The goal is get five offensive linemen week one that play well with one another and stop the game of musical chairs.
My only point is that Pugh was always a left tackle in college. And he has had a full year in the NFL. He knows who he's going against. He knows he's acclimated to the system. So to put him back at his natural position, I mean, I know we got a lot of money invested in Beattie, but I mean, if he's not going to be good, he's not going to be good. We can get a right tackle. We can find a right tackle to help, you know, to solidify that position. But left tackle, I think we should start putting Pugh at left tackle and letting him do his thing, you know? I mean,
but you're also talking about, Carl, let's not forget, Justin Pugh, he had a great rookie year, did he not? Do you disagree with me? Justin Pugh had a great rookie. I understand that, but you solidified right tackle. You know, why break something that's not broken? You've got the right side of your line that is in good shape thanks to Justin Pugh. And comparing the question marks at tight end to Will Beattie, you know, I don't think there's enough substance there. I'm not saying that you were doing that 100%, but you were alluding to it. Remember, Will Beattie was here in 2012. He was here in 2011, 10, and 9. He battled injuries, but you have at least more stock with Will Beattie and less concern than you have with the tight end position.
Well, Will Beattie, I mean, the way the players do it, the way the organization and the owners do it, it's what have you done for me lately? And Will Beattie hasn't done nothing for us lately, and then he broke his leg. And Pugh is a natural left tackle. He was really good at right tackle. Do you know how much better he could be if he went back to his natural position?
I'm sure he would be an effective left tackle, too, and it's good to have somebody on the roster who can move around. Look at David Deal. David Deal played multiple positions outside of center during the course of his career. So it never hurts to have versatility on your line, and you're not losing Justin Pugh. But I'm saying that you've got Will Beattie, and he's coming off a broken leg, and he's coming off a rough season. And there's reasons to be questioning his play, but there's not reasons to be overly concerned that Will Beattie forgot how to play football and he can't return to productivity. When we talk about Adrian Robinson, Carl, hasn't given us anything to say. You feel good that this is definitely going to be his breakout year. Will Beattie, I think, has provided enough to say, okay, you know what? There's a good chance he's going to bounce back in 2014.
I just don't like the broken leg. I just don't like a bad year and then a broken leg.
Let me ask you this, Carl. And I don't mean to cut you off. I'll let you talk. I didn't mean to interrupt. What is it about the broken leg? Because let's face it, there have been other NFL players that have had broken legs and other injuries such as ACLs. And they've come back, though.
But most of the time, that year off of a broken leg, you're standing on your leg, and most of the time they just don't have the confidence in the leg. They just don't have, you know, there's no confidence in I can push off, or I can jump, or I can stand my ground on that leg. There's just not enough. I've known guys that have played a year after a broken leg, and they just not half the player that they've been. And then he had a bad year before the broken leg. So
in the years before, you know, part of it was injuries. He was in and out of the lineup. But 2012, you know, there were a number of games where the Giants were running the football effectively, too. And Will Beattie was a big reason why. If you remember in 2012, and I'm just throwing out one game, and I have to look at the numbers closely, that Carolina game on Thursday night, Andre Brown winds up running for over 100 yards. Will Beatty was a big reason why. A lot of his runs were off the left side, Andre Brown. So, you know, were there issues at times with Will Beatty? Absolutely. But there were also a number of bright spots, too, you can make the point.
Okay, I'm in Charlotte now, and for the first time I was able to bring my entire family to a football game and a Giants game, and we went to the Carolina game. And I'm a big-time Giants fan with all my stuff on. And the first time that I brought my whole family to a Giants-Carolina game, oh, my God, Will Beatty was so bad. Eli got beaten down so bad. It was so embarrassing. It was just, I was like, I'm sorry, kids. I'm sorry.
We're talking about this same Panthers game, this 2012 Thursday night game. That's the game you're referring to?
No, it wasn't. It was a Sunday game. This last.
Oh, you're talking. Okay, well, no, because you and I are talking about.
I thought. Like 15 times
correct.
In the first 5 seconds.
Well, but I was referring to 2012. I thought you were referring to that 2012 game. You're referring to last season. You're right, where Eli Manning was sacked numerous times in the first half alone, and it was embarrassing. And correct, Will Beatty had a very rough game. That was probably his roughest game of the season, and no argument there. But I'm going back to what he did before 2013. You know, you're focusing on last year, and you have every right to, and every Giants fan would agree with you. And Will Beatty admitted that he was not very happy about his 2013 performance. So, you know, the writing's on the wall. He knows that he has to have a bounce-back season, but I'm saying before we write Will Beatty off, Carl, and listen, appreciate the phone call. I want to get to a few more calls. Thanks so much for chiming in. Before we write Will Beatty off, let's not forget that he has a resume. He has a number of years under his belt with the Giants. So to say you're as concerned about Will Beatty as you're concerned about Adrian Robinson or another position where this player hasn't done much of anything, that to me is a little bit of a stretch because that means you're throwing everything that Will Beatty did out the window. So let's see what Will Beatty does during training camp. That's step number one. Carl was throwing out, he's very concerned about the broken leg. He broke the leg in the season finale of 2013. So he's been on the side, he's been running, he's been working out, but he hasn't been taking any contact, and he hasn't been lining up with the offensive line. He and Mario Manning have been working out on the side. I've been watching them work out on the side. So they've been slowly progressing. The both of them are targeting July 22nd when the Giants have their first training camp practice as the day that they hope to at least get out there. Are they going to be limited? Are they going to be a full participant? I'm not exactly sure. But the goal is they're going to start putting on some pads and doing something. Let's see what Will Beatty does over the course of training camp leading into those preseason games. If we get to preseason game number 1 and 2 and Will Beatty is still extremely limited, hey, then we can say, okay, now there's time for a little bit concern as to getting another left tackle ready in the event that Will Beatty is not ready to go in week number 1. But, you know, training camp we're talking about is going to be a month long. We've got 5 preseason games. There's going to be plenty of time to evaluate Will Beatty. I understand he's not going to be going up against the number 1 pass rushers every week, but there's going to be a number of weeks to say, okay, Will Beatty is showing confidence in the leg. He should be ready to go in week number 1. As compared to now where, you know, I can't tell you with confidence how much he's going to take on during the course of training camp. We can only go by word of mouth. Word of mouth right now is those two players, Manningham with the knee, Beatty with the leg, they're targeting July 22nd as their first day to go out there and do something. Right now, it's only work on the side. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Well, I'm sure he's got something to say about Will Beatty, Adrian Robinson, and the whole clan. We go to Charlie in Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
How you doing?
Doing all right, Charlie.
I agree with the last caller that I think left tackles are most positions of concern, but I'm not throwing Will Beatty in the bus. But I just hope the Giants are smart with Snead and Beatty and the guys that are injured because we need them this September against Detroit. We don't need them the first preseason game. So I hope they bring them on slowly and let them – I mean, these guys are veterans. They only need 1 or 2 games, the last preseason game or the last 2, to get where they want to be. So I hope they don't rush them back. Because these are injuries that, you know, they need to take time on. So I hope they don't burn them out
during
training camp.
I agree with you, Charlie. However, I do think Carl brings up a good point, and this is where I agree with Carl, that when it comes to a broken leg, you want to regain that confidence, and working out on the side can only give you so much confidence in your leg. So I think
Beattie does need
some additional work.
Yeah, but, you know, they don't need to start the first preseason game. We got five of them. So, you know what I'm saying? They can give him some time, you know, and, you know, the last two preseason games, put him in, you know, at that point, and if he's not ready, he's not ready. So the concern is who's going to be in the backup position. That's the concern. And about the tight ends, I think you were rewriting history a little bit on Martellus Bennett. They really didn't want to sign him, because if they really wanted him, they would have signed him. They didn't really give him a good offer at all, not even close to Chicago. And if they had at least offered something decent and respectful, Bennett might have re-signed. He might not, but Reese doesn't value tight ends, or he would have kept Bennett, or he would have kicked Ebron in the draft and moved up one or two spots. But that's why, I don't know, maybe that's why he said Robinson was the JPP of tight ends, because they got him in the fourth round. They got him for cheap, so he was hoping that he was going to turn into something. But I see our tight ends are, I think they're going to be fine, and we do have blocking tight ends. Keller is a blocking tight end, and Fells is a blocking
Correct.
Tight end.
Exactly.
Both
yeah.
those guys. And they're good blockers. They're probably as good, if not better, than Bear was. So I don't see a problem with that. You know, I wish we had really gotten a tight end, but we haven't, so we are where we are. And I think Robinson, if he can stay healthy, I think he's going to have a really good year. It just depends if he can stay healthy like everybody else. And Holiday, your man Holiday, he looks good when he's not getting hit. That's the problem. He fumbles. He fumbled 10 times. And if you know Coughlin, if he fumbles once, he will be on the bench. And if he fumbles twice, he'll probably be cut. So until he actually plays in a game and actually can hold on to the football, I wouldn't count too much on this guy.
Well, first of all, as many mishaps as he's had, and I understand it's been well documented with the fumbles, he's also reached the end zone a few times. I'm talking about special teams. Wide receiver, He doesn't have much of a resume because he only has two receptions over the course of his career, and that came back in 2012. So, you know, right now it's in the speculative stage. So let's see him. Let's not assume, though, that he's going to drop every pass that he gets and ball security is going to be an issue. I mean, I got to see it first.
Why would you expect that when the guy's done it most of his career?
Well,
that's what I don't understand why they even brought this guy on board.
But Charlie, you got to take the good with the bad. He's had some bad, but he's also had a lot of good. Would you not agree?
So Coughlin's going to be happy with him scoring a touchdown on special teams and then fumbling twice and giving the ball over to the other team.
Well, but let's
you
see that happen.
That? I don't.
But for a player that's only had two receptions as a wide receiver, Charlie, you're talking about fumbles on special teams. Let's see the fumbles as a wide receiver, though. He doesn't have that same type of resume.
No, of course, he's only got caught two passes.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But you're assuming that he's going to fumble just as much as he did on special teams. Let me see it first, and then I'll say it's a concern.
The guy's a little guy. It depends on how they utilize him. If they utilize him smart, then he probably will be okay. But if they have him catching passes over the middle and
I think they're going to use him out of the screens or maybe an end around here or there. They're not going to put him over the middle where he's going to get hammered. You know, you look at Wes Welker, you look at Julian Edelman. You know, some of these guys do go over the middle, but a lot of small wide receivers have had success in the NFL. So I throw height out of the window when it comes to using that as an excuse as to keep a guy on the bench.
Well, as long as he holds on to the ball, he will be fine. But that's the big question. And you know Coughlin will sit him in a heartbeat, and we'll never see him again on the bench. But anyway, next up, defensive backs. I still hope that they will, depending on what happens with injuries, I'm hoping that they will bring back Will Hill, put him on pulp, see where we are 6 weeks later. If everybody's playing really well and we don't have a ton of injuries and for safeties, then you can decide to cut him or do whatever you want to do. But I think he's a good backup plan. He's a good safety plan in case we have a bunch of injuries and in case a guy like Bowman and Dempsey don't work out, that they're not – they're special team guys, but they're not, you know, like a really strong safety, third safety or fourth safety. So that's what I would do. I'm hoping they would do that. And I have a question for you. I think you answered it, but just to clarify, if they decide to take – to bring Will be – I mean, Will Hill back, they can automatically put him on PULP. So they don't have to wait and have him on the 53 at the end of the year and then have – and then, you know, have to have him on the roster. And then the week later they can put him on PULP. They can put him on PULP now and it wouldn't affect their roster.
Correct. It would be similar to J-Ron Hosley, meaning once the week one roster is set, you put Hosley and Hill on the suspended list. That's what it comes down to. The PUP is the physically unable to perform list, but that wouldn't be – applying to Hosley,
right,
it would be the suspended list
as with
Will Hill. And then you're right, when the 6-game suspension is over for Hosley, when the 4-game is over, then you have to make a roster spot because you have to bring them as part of the 53, so you'd have to cut somebody or waive somebody. So that's when you'd have to make a decision. And they could hypothetically do that with Will Hill, but you know, I think that that's so far down the road, Charlie. You want to be productive over the first 6 games. So you want to make sure that you have a productive safety or an extra corner come week one. You're not thinking for the Giants what's going to happen in week 7 right now. So, yes.
I totally understand.
You know, I'm just saying
as a backup, you know, in case the safeties really suck or we have an injury there that on somebody, hopefully not, then, you know, at least he'd be there, and then they can say, okay, we don't need him because everyone's playing great, and we have no injuries, sweet, and fine, we'll just cut him. Or they can say, oh, my God, these guys aren't who we thought they were, and this guy will really help us, and they'll have him there. If they don't have him there, then they don't have that protection, and I just think it would be smart on their part to do that. And just like one caller said many moons ago, when Will Hill has been suspended, when he comes back, he is fine. He, you know, he does everything he's supposed to do, and you know, and he doesn't fall back. Maybe the next year he falls back, but he doesn't that year. So, to me, I think it would be smart for them to bring him back, and just for those reasons. As I said.
Well, from an Charlie, I'll let you continue. From an X's and O's standpoint, Will Hill is still very productive. You'll get no argument from me there. But the other thing that you can't overlook, and we debated this and we talked about this in great detail when Will Hill was released, is what type of a message it sends to the rest of the players. So even though you've had some time, and let's say you do bring him back, it's not as if you brought him back the minute after he was suspended. You still are giving him another chance. And you're also saying to the rest of the players, as an act of desperation, when the players on the current roster are struggling, we will then reach and bring back some questionable characters. And I don't know if the Giants are willing to do that. That's at least something that has to enter the conversation, regardless of what he can do for you from an X's and O's standpoint.
Right. No, I understand that. But like I said before, I just think that when the NFL gives up on him, then that's when you should give up on him. If the NFL had suspended him for a year, then you give up on him for a year or longer. But when the NFL says, no, we're only going to give you 6 games because whatever reason, I mean, it should have been a year. So there was something that happened where they said, well, maybe this guy was secondhand smoke or whatever it was. But they said, no, just 6 games. So the Giants, to me, should have just gone along with the NFL, and until the NFL kicks this guy out, I would keep him on the team just as safety reasons, in case we have injuries, in case these guys don't play like we think they should play. And but, you know, whether they'll do that, I don't know. So, I don't know. I just hope they are careful with the guys who are injured and that they don't push them and have to get them there, like Wilson, too. I don't think they have to push him, and, you know, the first day back, he's got to be out there hitting people with his neck. I think hopefully they let him, because he's, you know, they can wait a couple of weeks, you know, get him in the third or the fourth preseason game. They don't have to rush this guy back. I'm just hoping they're cautious with people. I just hope they just don't go, okay, let's get him out there. We got to get him out there. And they, you know, I just think it's a big mistake. I think they got to, you know, take their time with these guys. And most of them are veterans, and they'll be able to jump in pretty easy because they are veterans. So I just hope they're smart. We'll see if they are or not.
Well, we've seen that thus far with Chris Snee. They could have thrown Chris Snee out in minicamp at OTAs because he didn't play a lot last season, but because of the elbow discomfort, they're like, Chris, you're going to watch from the side. We're not taking any chances. So I think the Giants have no plans to rush Beattie or Snee back, especially if something is still lingering, because you're right. They need them for the 16 games that matter, not the five that don't. No argument there.
Right. Right.
Appreciate it.
And the Detroit game to me is very worrisome just because of the left tackle situation, because of Detroit's pass rush. And also they have incredible wide receivers. And if we don't get a pass rush on Matthews, it could be a long day. It could be a long day. And to me, if we can win that game or at least be very competitive in that game, then I think things would bode well. But, you know, if we end up getting blown out of that game, it's going to be a long, long season. So, I'm hoping that things will, their lines will get solidified and that the offensive line will be able to play well and the defensive line will actually have a pass rush. Like they used to have, and if they do that, then we'll be fine. But that's going to be a big deal. Detroit's a great, great team to face on the first week because it's going to tell us in both areas whether we have an offensive line and whether we have a defensive pass rush.
Well, that's a good point, Charlie, and appreciate the phone call because when it comes to the Lions, Charlie brings up a good point. They have a very good front in terms of their four-man front on defense. You're going to have Ndamukong Suh, Nick Fairley, Ziggy Ansah. They've got Jones that they just brought in on the left defensive end, Jason Jones. So you're talking about a unit that has a knack to get to the quarterback. Goes without saying. And they showed that last season. With their offensive line, Detroit was up there in protecting Matthew Stafford, one of the best offensive lines. So assuming their group stays healthy and survives training camp in the preseason, it will be a good barometer to determine, okay, where do the Giants stand on both sides? But we've got a long way to go before we start speculating the challenges that Week 1 will present. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat. You can follow and interact with me at Lance Meadow on Twitter. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W, Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us. Lance Meadow with you. Before we get back to the lines, let's check in on Twitter. Haven't addressed a number of tweets that have been thrown out there. I know a number of you weighing in on the majority of the phone calls that we got to. Let's take a look here. Avery writes in at TQ Man AF. We have a great record with tight ends. Efficiency is what we need. Tony Gonzalez's don't grow on trees. If so, every team would have one. And you don't need a big playmaker tight end by name, I guess is what I'm getting at. And all you need to do is look at the Giants roster in the past. Now, I believe it was Charlie who mentioned that Jerry Reese doesn't value the tight end because they didn't go out and re-sign Martellus Bennett. You also have to remember, the Giants didn't have a great deal of financial flexibility that offseason. So you want to say they didn't put a strong enough offer in front of Martellus Bennett? You could make that claim, but they didn't have a lot of financial means to dig deep in their pockets. They didn't have a lot of flexibility. And that is the truth. That's not a stretch. That's not a defense mechanism. The numbers speak volumes. Giants did not have as much as they had this offseason. So that was another reason why they couldn't retain the rights of Martellus Bennett. The Bears gave him a very strong offer. We're talking about $5 million a year. But that doesn't mean you need Martellus Bennett to survive in the NFL. Seahawks, who was their tight end last year? Kellen Davis, who's now with the New York Giants. Was Kellen Davis making play after play? Was he a big reason why the Seahawks won a Super Bowl? There's no blueprint in the NFL that says you need a tight end to get to the Super Bowl. Did the Broncos have a tight end? Yes, the Broncos had a tight end. Every team takes a different path. But to say you need a tight end to get there, that's stretching the truth. If you look at a number of the teams that were in the postseason, the Eagles made the playoffs from the NFC East. They had a tight end by committee, which was a term I saw thrown out, which may be something that holds true for the Giants. They didn't necessarily have one specific playmaker. Had a variety of guys. And maybe the Giants are going to have that. Adrian Robinson may be penciled in as the number one, but Daniel Fells and Kellen Davis, those could be two guys that they line up on just as many plays as Adrian Robinson. Remember, efficiency, reliability. Those are the two terms when it comes to the tight end. So I think Avery hit it right on the nose. Let's take a look at some more tweets. Sonny Boy, it's Sonny Boy 2323. Do you think they can move Zach Bowman to safety? He's pretty physical. Bowman, I'm not exactly sure how many reps he may have had with the Bears at safety. From what I recall, they pretty much utilized him to back up Peanut Tillman. I'd have to really look into each and every game. I think he does have the physicality to play safety. But I think they look at him more as either a corner or a hybrid type of player before they're actually going to line him up as a safety on this team. And they believe he's going to get a lot of time on special teams. He's got that speed. They are very excited about the speed factor. Him and Quinton Demps, those two in particular, what they can bring, not just in the return game, but the coverage game. But to answer your question, Sonny, I think Zach Bowman does have the physicality to play safety. I just don't think that it's necessarily in the game plan for the Giants. Right now, I can see them turning to a Cooper Taylor and obviously Demps before they would necessarily turn to Zach Bowman. And Zach Bowman has enough value, even if they don't use him at safety, to make this roster. Need a pinky ring at Big Blue. Go Rings weighing in and claiming that, like Charlie, says the tight ends are never and will never be valued much and used as a hybrid wide receiver under Tom Coughlin. So that seems to be the mindset for a number of Giants fans. However, Need a Pinky Ring goes on to say, I'd rather have a non-flashy tight end with a Super Bowl any day. And that gets back to my point. You don't need Jimmy Graham to win the Super Bowl. The Giants didn't have a Jimmy Graham when they won the Super Bowl. We're talking about Kevin Boss made plays. We're talking about Travis Beckham and Jake Ballard. They won a Super Bowl with those two. Let's not forget about that. Avery also weighing in. We were talking about the safety movement. I agree. Antral Roll should stay where he is. He's gotten burned a few times when he has been moved. Got to keep him in his comfort zone. And I think you have the depth to do that this season. Sonny Boy also writes in, number of returning tweets. I would like us to have Holiday used as a Darren Sproles out of the backfield, catch passes, mismatch on linebackers. And that's exactly how I envisioned them using him. That was the first player that came to mind when I saw the alignments in minicamp and OTAs. I said Darren Sproles. First player that came to my mind in terms of how they were lining up and in terms of the stature connected to both. Jay Smith. At JU Blue 1, Blue spelled BLU. These are the corners that he expects to make the team. Dominic Rogers Cromartie, Prince Amukamara, Thurmond, Bowman, Charles James, McBride. So that's his six. With Jayron Hosley, now remember, Jayron Hosley, you could put on the suspended list. Let's clarify that, okay? You don't have to cut him. When you narrow down your 53-man roster, Hosley could take part in training camp. He could play in preseason games. But then when you make your week one roster, obviously you have to do something with him. So you can store him on the suspended list. You can see what you have with your six corners, evaluate them. And then when you get to week five, if you don't think that a Charles James or a Tremaine McBride are getting it done, you can bring Hosley onto the roster. And that is something that the Giants could potentially do. They could keep him on the suspended list to start the season. That is something they've done in the past. Will Hill has started the season on the suspended list. That would not be a reach for the Giants. Jay Smith also then writes, I think we do need a tight end that can be a red zone threat to catch over the top, primarily due to the lack of wide receiver height. It would always be nice to have a tight end that you could target in the end zone. I don't think anyone would disagree with that statement, but that doesn't mean that, once again, it's got to be a wow-me tight end. Daniel Fells, he can catch passes in the end zone. Kellen Davis can catch passes in the end zone. Those two guys have some size. Kellen Davis is a pretty big guy. Let's not forget about that. We were talking about Adrian Robinson's stature and his numbers. Let's look at some of these other tight ends. Kellen Davis is 6'7", 265. Larry Donnell is 6'6". Daniel Fells is 6'4", like Adrian Robinson. They have some height outside of Adrian Robinson. So you have a red zone target right now on the roster. You don't have to go out and get one. Let's take a look at some of the tweets before we get back to the phone lines. Number of you weighing in on a variety of topics, as you do each and every day. Jay Smith also writing in. He thinks Will Beatty will have a comeback year. He's done it. He knows fire is hot. Time to shine. Can't blame the health or the offensive line. It is better as a whole. NFL Jints at NFL Jints. The whole offensive line looked bad, not just Beatty. We get it. Beatty was bad. Move on. Whenever we talk about the offensive line from 2013, for some reason, Will Beatty seems to be the focal point. And I'm not saying that you're out of line by focusing in on Will Beatty, but you're also then dismissing everyone else on the offensive line. And that's exactly what NFL Jins brought to light. If you want to talk about 2013, when the archives are fully cemented, when you look back at 2013, you've got to say the offensive line as a group struggled. To say that Will Beatty is the one player to blame is unfair. There were a number of other players that got hurt. There were a number of other players that got moved around. So to me, you're conveniently placing the blame on one player. See if we can squeeze in another tweet here before we get back to the lines. Vic, haven't heard from Vic on Twitter in a while. Vic Fontana at NFLNYG43. The season will be defined by the play of Eli. And if we did enough on the offensive line in the offseason, I'm not sure we did. Well, Eli, I mean, there's only so much you can do with Eli. The goal is you get him healthy and you have him digest the new offense. In terms of the offensive line, which is, I think, where Vic is questioning, they went out, they got Jeff Schwartz, so that helped solidify the left guard spot. They went out and got J.D. Walton. He stayed healthy so far during OTAs and minicamp. That's a step in the right direction. Pugh's not a question on right tackle. We talked about that earlier in the year. And then you look at the right guard spot and the left tackle spot. Those two are the biggest questions. Doesn't mean that they don't have options there. They're questions because Snead and Beatty are coming off injury. But let's see. If those two get back to full health, then you have all five of them play during the course of the offseason and training camp, you know, then I don't think there's as many question marks. J-Rock at J-Rock underscore NYG says that Zach Miller was a tight end for the Seahawks last year, not Kellen Davis. Well, Davis was on the roster, but Zach Miller was utilized. So you are right, J-Rock. But I will still go back to the main point that I was making. You look at Miller's stats, you look at Davis's stats. We're not talking about players that put up monster numbers. And to back up my claims, let's bring up the numbers here. Let's take a look at what those two did. Kellen Davis from 2013. And the Seahawks also used a lot of double tight end formations. Kellen Davis played 15 games, 3 receptions for 32 yards. That was Kellen Davis's numbers last year. Zach Miller, let's take a look at what Miller did. My computer would cooperate. Zach Miller in 2013, 33 receptions, 387 yards. Miller was more of the receiving tight end. Davis was more of the blocking tight end. But remember, the strength of the Seahawks was their offensive line and their tight ends, because that allowed Marshawn Lynch to be one of the top runners in the NFL, and that's one of the reasons why they had one of the best running games. So Miller was in a lot, just as much as, I mean, Davis was in a lot, excuse me, as much as Miller. Problem is, they didn't have Davis run routes. So they had perhaps similar to what the Giants can run this season. You have your blocking tight end and a Daniel Fells or a Davis, and then you have Adrian Robinson run out and catch passes. So it's not rocket science here. You can get the most out of players that don't necessarily jump off the page. Are there question marks still attached? Absolutely. But I'm going based on other teams that have had success and have had similar structures. Let's head to the lines. 201-939-4513. Drew is in Virginia. Drew, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, what's going on, man?
Doing well, Drew. How about yourself? What you got?
Good, good. Hey, man, I'm coming in on a show late, so, you know, I don't know what was going on. But I want to address some of the comments that I heard. With regards to Pugh being moved, Pugh-Beattie debate, you know, I actually have to agree with you 100%, man. We don't need to be playing any more of these mix and matches and musical chair things. You know, yeah, I agree with everybody. I do have huge concerns about Beattie, you know, especially the way he played last year and then coming off the broken leg and everything. But, you know, it's not like players have never come back from broken legs, okay? So, you know, it is what it is. You know, it's the NFL of sports. People come back from big injuries all the time. So with that said, man, we can only hope that Beattie, you know, comes back and is ready to play. But moving Pugh around, you know, all over the place and then just basically benching Beattie is just is stupid. You know, bottom line is we got the money invested in him and we just want to have to go and see. However, if he has another bad year or if he's starting out bad, you know, then we'll have to make the adjustments then. But for the time being, yeah, I think, you know, we have what we have and we just want to have to go with that. So that's where I have.
And remember, and I'll let you continue, Drew, experimentation on the offensive line is what led to struggles last season. So I think the goal this season is avoid that game of musical chairs. The more you play and tweak the offensive line, it's just going to lead to bad things, and it's going to take away from continuity. And I don't think they can afford to do that again.
Yeah, I agree. That's my point, and I totally agree with that. You know, the key word being continuity, okay? You know, let these guys play where they play, and, you know, it's not – I mean, yeah, you know, Pugh might have played a different position in college, but in the NFL, this is where he is. So, you know, this is where he is. This is where he's been playing. He's been used to the position. And, I mean, you know, we just have to let these guys play. You know, with regards to Will Beattie, yeah, Will Beattie had a horrendous year, and you are correct. So did the offensive line, but Beattie stood out because he was beat a number of times. However, there was a lot of confusion on the line overall, and I just think people were like, okay, I thought you had him. I thought you had him. And, you know, it's just a lot of – I mean, it was just horrendous. Hopefully this year things can be a little bit more solidified and everything else because – also, Snee wasn't exactly blowing it up last year either. So, you know, we can only hope and pray. You know, my concern is the offensive line, but hopefully things will get a little bit better. Like I said, I just think that, you know, last year was a bad year. And, you know, like somebody said about the defense, I don't think the offensive line can get any worse than it got last year.
Well, I wouldn't think so. I would agree with you on that front, Drew. And also, health was a big factor. We could sit here and break down the individual play of all the offensive linemen and mechanics, mental, that all played a role. But physically, a lot of these guys were beat up. You mentioned Chris Snee. Chris Snee didn't even last the whole season. He wound up being put on IR, needed surgery. Will Beattie, I'm not saying he was banged up during the season, but he got hurt in the later stages of the season. They went through a variety of different centers. David Deal was moved around. He got hurt. It was a laundry list of one injury after another. And this year, if everyone's healthy, that should be a huge step in the right direction. And you don't have to worry about guys being 75% versus 90% coming into every game. I think there were a lot of question marks about, you know, is this guy going to be able to even get through the game because his knee can't hold up or his elbow is all swollen? Those were a lot of conversations last year. You don't want to have that again this year.
Yeah, and I agree with that, John. But this also kind of comes to, you know, actually, man, this is another, you kind of bring me to another point. You know, with the NFL, you know, in general, sports in general, okay, you know, we all know, okay, it's no secret that, you know, you're going to have injuries. All teams have injuries. It basically comes down to, you know, to me, which team can muster their injuries the best. okay, or can handle that injuries the best. You know, with that said, you know, hopefully the Giants are looking at these and saying, okay, what is our plan B for Beattie? What is our plan B for Snead? You know, we gonna, my thing is this, okay, we're gonna have to, you know, have a plan, because again, unfortunately, injuries are a huge part of the game, and like I said, you know, it just comes down to which team can handle their injuries the best. And I don't think, you know, in the past, the Giants have really done a good job with that. However,
well, that's why they also brought in a lot of veterans who may not wow you right now, but they brought in the Charles Browns, the Jerrys of the world, so that in the event somebody does get hurt, you're not relying on a rookie who's still transferring his skill set from college to the NFL. So that they addressed. I don't know if it's going to necessarily prevent any other issues down the road. You can't say that with certainty, but you could feel better that, hey, in event that player A goes down, the B guy on the depth chart has been out there before in that spot, as opposed to a rookie who's still learning.
And I agree with that, and I will say that is the plus side of sticking with veterans. That is your plus side. The negative is on, you know, can be that, well, these guys are older, beat up. But on a plus side, you're right. If a starter goes down, you know, you got, okay, here's a veteran who's been around, can know how to handle it. The last thing I want to say, man, is, you know, because Charlie makes me laugh with Will Hill, okay? I will tell you right now, you can put me down, write it down on a paper, do whatever you want. I will be utterly and completely shocked and blown away if the Giants brought back Will Hill. They cut him for a reason, because this kid is not reliable, okay? He's still not picked up, okay, because he's not reliable. I don't mean no harm. I don't wish Will Hill no harm or whatever. I wish the best for him and everything. But the bottom line, and again, fans keep forgetting it, okay, if the team, regardless of what we feel or not, I was in the military, Lance, for 26 years. Follow me for a second, okay? I worked on aircraft, okay, and some of our aircraft carried nuclear weapons, okay? By me working on those aircraft, I was under a particular program, okay? And whether I liked it or not, if I sneezed the wrong way, I had to let my supervisor know. If I bought over-the-counter medication, I had to let my supervisor know. Okay. Point being, okay, when you're in an organization, okay, and you're working for these people, the rules might sound dumb to the outside people, but on the inside, there's a reason that we have these rules. We don't have to always agree with them, but if the NFL says we don't want you smoking weed, regardless of what the rest of the society says, those is the NFL rules. That is the contract you signed. Will Hill couldn't follow those rules, and the Giants had no alternative but to let him go, regardless of whether the NFL said we're going to suspend you 6, 1 year, or 4 games. The Giants said we cannot depend on this guy to be there when we need him. He's killing us. We got to let him go. So I'll be shocked to see if the Giants. I would be utterly and completely shocked, because I think it just comes down to a discipline thing, and it just comes down to a credibility issue. And if the Giants turn around and bring Will Hill back, then, you know, really, what are you saying? And now you're sending mixed messages, and you're creating a whole nother avenue of problems. Yes, Will Hill is a great player. Would love to see him come back, but, you know, we're done with him, man. So,
well, and here's the other thing, Drew. We're looking at it from the perspective of the Giants, but, you know, Will Hill right now, maybe his priority is to straighten out his life. I mean, that's what he has to do right now. Before you even think about football, he's got to get his personal things on the same page, because that's going to prevent him from even pursuing a future NFL career, because we've seen that no other team took a chance on him. So that means that the NFL as a whole is on the same page, that they realize he needs to straighten out his life before they can look to him as a reliable individual that can contribute to a team. So it really comes down to Will Hill.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you know, and I mean that would be anybody in life. You know, it's like I tell my kids all the time. You know, What you do today has a big influence on tomorrow, okay? And, you know, if this is, you know, like I tell them, if this is what you want to do, then these are the sacrifices and this is the work that you have to put in. You know, if Will Hill wants to play football, he's going to have to give up weed because why? Again, regardless of what the civilian population is doing, inside the NFL, they don't want you doing these things. And if you feel like this is what you want to do and you get caught or whatever, then you can't blame nobody but you. Look, man, I don't have any me personally, I don't have any issues with, you know, people want to smoke a little bit of weed or whatever. Hey, that's that, you know, I've been there, done that, so I get it. That's not my point. I'm not against weed, but again, if an organization say you can't do these things, however dumb we think it is, then you simply can't do it. Again, I, you know, me being 26 years in the military. Okay, if I got mad at my supervisor and told my supervisor to go to hell, okay, reality is I could be put in jail for that. Okay, in the civilian world that's laughable, but in the military that can happen. So, you know, but when I chose to stay in the military, I accepted these rules, and that is my point.
And I think you make an excellent point, Drew. When you join an organization, when you join a league, they have a set of rules, and you need to look at those rules, make sure that you've digested them, and follow them to a T. When you don't, then that means the league or the organization has every right to part ways with you. And that's pretty much the best way to sum things up.
Yep. All right, Lance, that's it, man. Have a great day, and thanks for taking my call.
Not a problem, Drew. Appreciate the phone call, and as many of you call in similar to Drew, we certainly appreciate the service that you have given to this country. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Follow and interact with me, at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. If there are any tweets I did not address on the program, as I try to do after each and every show, I will try to get back to you and answer any of your questions or comments. Let me run through the schedule for the rest of the week because things have slightly changed compared to what I threw out after yesterday's show. The office is going to be closed Thursday and Friday this week because of the July 4th holiday weekend. So there will not be a show on Thursday. There will not be a show on Friday. There will be a show tomorrow, being Wednesday. Paul Dottino will be with you. I will then be back on Monday, which will be our next show following Wednesday. So that's pretty much the schedule. Hopefully you'll be able to survive without some Big Blue Kickoff Live for two consecutive days, Thursday and Friday. But Paul will be able to take up and continue the conversation on Wednesday, and then I will be back with you on Monday. You want to continue any of the conversations, once again, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter, at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. And today, July 1st, kicks off 20 questions in 20 days, which is going to be our feature on Giants.com, where we will throw out 20 of the biggest questions heading into training camp, so make sure you check that out. There's also some interviews with the players, some features that I've done where I have answered a number of your questions that have been sent in via Twitter, via email. So a lot of good stuff going on Giants.com, even though it's a relatively quiet period. So you can get your daily Giants stuff each and every day here on our website, Giants.com, and you can listen to Big Blue Kickoff Live each and every morning at 9:30 a.m. Eastern here on Giants.com as well. Great stuff as always on Twitter, on the phones. I will be back with you on Monday, Paul Dottino on Wednesday. Have a great holiday weekend, and we will pick up the conversation next week. Lance Meadow signing off. Have a good Tuesday here on Giants.com.